Many years ago, as some of you know, I lived in Athens, Greece for a few years. Those were some of the most challenging, most shaping, and most happy years of my life. I made friends there, and some of my friends were Greeks who had grown up in Romania under the fearful and terrible thumb of the dictator Nicolae Ceausescu. Maria and Pascalis had managed to get out of Romania with almost nothing but their family and to relocate to Greece, where they began a new life. They didn't like to talk about Romania. They did so only in the most general terms, making it clear that years later, even after the death of Ceausescu and the beginning of a new regime, they would never go back and never forget what they had suffered there. Romania has had a tough time as a country. In addition to the challenges of authoritarian and abusive governments, like Greece, it is a poor country. And like Greece, it is an incredibly beautiful country. One of the most beautiful regions is Transylvania. Transylvania really does exist. And it is most famous, of course, for something completely fictional, being the home turf of Count Dracula, still the most famous vampire in all fiction. In reality, Romania and Transylvania are defined by appealing villages and romantic castles, the majestic Carpathian Mountains, and lushly wooded countryside that makes sense of the name Transylvania, which means across the forest, Transylvania. One of the things Transylvania should be famous for is, of course, I know you're going to say this, I'm just going to jump in and say, we all know King John Sigismund, right? Of course. King John Sigismund and his most famous act, we all know, the Edict of Torda. It's almost not worth talking about because it's so old hat. And we're all so excruciatingly, painfully, excitedly aware that the anniversary is coming up on January 28th. I should just skip these next few pages, but just in case there's anybody new who astonishingly hasn't heard of the Edict of Torda, it was established exactly 450 years ago in 1568. 450 years ago. 1568. They said congregations should be allowed to choose their own preachers. It was enacted in Torda, a city in Romania, and it was put in place by King John Sigismund, who was the king at the time of the area, following the advocacy of his Unitarian court physician, Giorgio Biandrata, and his Unitarian court preacher, Franz David, or as we now call him, Francis David. John Sigismund was the first and only Unitarian king ever in the history of the world. The Edict of Torda was at the time, remember, 1568. This is a time when, in most of Europe, Catholicism and Protestantism were in a mortal battle, and I mean mortal. This edict was an unprecedented declaration of religious tolerance. I've got this picture helpfully provided by the folks who are involved in our partner church program. This is an actual photograph. Of Francis David proclaiming the Edict of Torda. All right, it's not a photograph. It's a photo of a painting. But it is a painting of Francis David proclaiming the Edict of Torda. It's really actually a big deal. It's a real point of pride for us, and it should be. John Sigismund's generous reforms did not prosper when his successor took the throne. In fact, the next ruler initiated a period of active religious persecution. But the seeds had been irretrievably sown. And Transylvania endured as an area with some unusual religious freedoms and acceptance, and Unitarianism has persisted there right up to the present day. Outside of the United States and England, which is where our Unitarian forebears came from, Transylvania has the greatest number of Unitarian churches in the world. Fast forward to the modern era and our own church's entry into the story of Transylvania Unitarianism. We were one of the very first churches to enter into a partner church relationship with our spiritual kin, and it was back in the 1930s. This connection was initiated by our then minister, the Reverend Augustus Mendon Lord. He is the one whose beautiful portrait hangs over the fireplace in the minister's parlor, where we have refreshments each Sunday after church. If you haven't paid attention to those portraits, go check it out. It's hard to miss him. And he's the one who started this off. You'll find another artifact of that time with the baptismal cloth that's on display in the adjacent front parlor that was a gift from our partner church way back then. The importance of this outreach is so obvious when we consider how Eastern and Western Europe were beginning to struggle in the 1930s with fascism and deep unrest, and indeed that relationship was threatened and eventually overcome, first by the chaos and devastation of World War II, and then by the rise of communist dictatorships in the wake of the war. And so for most of the rest of the 20th century, Unitarians in Transylvania suffered persecution and condemnation for their faith and the unorthodox nature of their faith. And they stubbornly, faithfully, carefully endured. For so many of those same decades, the connection between them and us, this church, lay there, sundered. Sundered, but not perished. Instead, as it turned out, simply fallow, waiting for its season to rise and bloom again. That season began in 2002 when we visited the Unitarian Universalist Association headquarters in Boston to restart our partner church relationship. And the next year, Transylvanian Unitarian minister Judith Gellard came and spoke about all those years since we had first connected. Her own father was the minister who sent that baptismal cloth to our church all those years ago. Since then, the relationship has flourished. We have sent delegations to visit our partner church in Transylvania. They have sent delegations to visit us here. We have visited the very church, where the Edict of Torda was first proclaimed. I know, this is so exciting. We have visited the prison where Francis David ended up jailed for his radical doctrine of acceptance, the dungeon where he eventually died. We have received from those who have become our dear friends the memorial post that stands in our small garden on your right as you walk out to the parking lot. They also gave us, as we lift up every Sunday, the large candle holder in the back of this sanctuary, from which we light our own candles of joy and sorrow every week. We have gone back and forth building relationships that have grown from principle and interest to love and deep connections of experience and faith. Back in 2012, this church helped their church complete a bell tower. Sorry, 2010. Before the tower, people used to gather to the call of a sound of a recording of bells. And for the 3 years prior to the bell tower's completion, the recording they heard was a recording of our own Paul Revere bell.
here in our steeple. The beautiful, important ways that this relationship has endured has been reborn and has been strengthened now more than ever is so inspiring, not least because being Unitarian Universalist is lonely sometimes. There's no one like us in the world. There's no one like us in the world. We have each other in our congregations, and our congregations have each other in our association, but to have relationships, not just relationships, relations, not just friends, significant others, if you will, to whom we are bound, significant other churches, spiritual kin, sharing the same name and values, even across the globe. It's not just heartwarming, it's precious. We have ties and people who matter to us, to whom we matter because of our faith and because of that heritage we share, one that we live for, one some have died for, that people must be free to believe as they find, that respect for other beliefs and for authentic seeking faith is paramount, that care for all people is paramount, is in fact a manifestation of our faith. As perhaps many of us know, long-distance relationships take a lot of work. You have to make time to honor and nurture them and to communicate frequently with care and intention. I have a message for you this morning from Sibolj Kelemen, the minister of our partner church. He wrote this for your ears. On Saturday, the 13th of January, we lived through some touching and happy moments. 17 people from our congregation went to Torda and participated in the commemoration of the 450th anniversary of the Act of Religious Tolerance and Freedom of Conscience, or the Edict of Torda. It was a great and intimate moment that we were faced with the simple fact that one who lives in a community must not be restricted by our fellow humans with respect to our decisions about their faith. The edict says faith is a gift of God that we choose to follow. Therefore, humans have the right to live life as one finds right and true. Furthermore, no one should be punished or insulted because of their faith, and everyone has the right to live a faith-based life, to establish a community life value in their community, and thus to shape their future. I remember when I was there with you in 2008. You proudly showed me the church that was founded by Roger Williams. That was your start of religious freedom in Rhode Island. This founding religious movement in Providence, which told of the importance of community, of religious freedom, was like our Edict of Torda. The Unitarian Church exists because of this law. It was this law that defended our church, our faithful, and led us through our past to our present. 1568 is an important date, and a so important date for our history. The people here have understood they can only jointly and freely change the future. Today, I think, the law of freedom of religion calls us with the same weight and the same importance. It tells us that our human communities need to be built and the world of love must be lived. It is not the differences to be sought, but we need to find common points, feelings, and opportunities that make the future more beautiful and better. With these thoughts, we would like to wish you a warm Partner Church Sunday. Sibolj. Sibolj Kelemen and the congregation of Sentej Haza. At this point, I have a cold. At this point in rewriting this sermon as I was drafting it over the course of the week, I went online. This was my final redrafting on Saturday.
I went online to find the words that I read for our chalice lighting, which a colleague had sent to me in a Facebook message. And in my Facebook feed, I found a post, Martha Rice Sanders, showing all the people from First U gathering for the Women's March here in Providence. There a bunch of you were, with your coats and your hats and your signs and your smiles and your camaraderie and your commitment. I couldn't be there because I had to be working the last couple of days on this service and a bunch of other things that had to be prepared and organized and researched for other walks of life in this congregation. But I also didn't have to be there because you were there. We can't all be everywhere, and we don't need to be everywhere because we have each other. And together, we do so much more. We cover more ground, and we represent each other and all that we do in our faith. Our relationship with the Santa Casa congregation is part of this. That relationship is heartwarming and part of our strength and part of theirs and part of our reach and part of theirs and part of our past and part of theirs and part of our future and part of theirs. Part of who we are and part of who they are. No, really part of a larger we. A much larger we all together, a beautiful we, and a precious we, and an enduring we. And speaking of that larger we, and all that we do and are together, remember those five commitments I've been talking about this month? Ha! This far into the sermon, you thought maybe I had forgotten. Nope. They matter too much. You've got an insert in your order of service. Did you notice it yet? Small, and it's numbered, and it has your commitments at the top. Take a look at it. It has a place for you to put down five things you can do this year to make the greatest difference you can make. I hope you've been thinking about it. I have been thinking about it. It's hard to choose, I find. It's hard to figure out what is enough. Here's the thing. In the end, if you do really, you do what you can do, it will be enough. If you can go somewhere and be a presence for something we are committed to, that makes a difference. Some of us can make phone calls. Some of us can run a phone bank. Some of us can write a letter to the editor. Some of us can write a check. Some of us can come to a class or a conference or a rally. Some of us can go visit a place or people that we've never known before or never worked together with before, even here in Providence. Some of us can host people here at the church. Some of us can cook a meal or serve a meal. Some of us can cast a vote that will change something for the better. There are countless ways. And many of us, I know, will do more than five things. And some of us are going through great hardship. And to do one or two things will still represent extraordinary faithfulness. And for all of it, I am grateful. So here's what I am asking you to do. Take that paper and write down what you commit to doing this year. Think about what's the most you can do, whatever that looks like. Don't let yourself off the hook, and don't beat yourself up. We all do what we can do. Whenever I have done truly what I could do, when it was a lot, and when it was a little. And sometimes it is a little, because I'm mortal, We all are. And whether it succeeds or not, even when it fails, there is a peace I feel because, a lot or a little, I know I did what I could. I'm sure. And that is all I can ask of myself. And that is all anyone can ask. And that is certainly all I am asking of you. Think about what you can commit to. Write it down. Do it now as I'm talking and you're thinking about your choices and only half listening, if that, to what I'm saying. Or do it this afternoon. Or do it tonight before bed. But do it today. And look at what you have put down. That is your faith in action. That is a great gift. And it is a testament. Be proud of it. I am proud of it. I am proud to be with you, proud to be your minister, proud to be serving with you and walking with you in these times that are so hard and so full of urgency and opportunity, these times that will not leave us as they found us. Put your commitments on your fridge or in your bedside table or in your wallet. Keep them somewhere close. Look at them from time to time. Remind yourself and be proud of your faith, of our faith in action. You are not alone. We are not alone. Our kin in Transylvania are not alone. In Transylvania, it is nigh onto evening now. And they are lighting their lamps. There, here, between our two places, our two peoples, our one broad faith, the light comes from the people. Thank goodness. Amen.